If you are a student of history, you would remember that at the Battle of Yorktown in the Revolutionary War, that when General Cornwallis and all the British troops realize they've been defeated, they stacked their rifles, and Cornwallis was indisposed that day, so he couldn't hand over his sword to General Washington. But as all of the British soldiers marched in line away from the battlefield, the fife and drum corps for the British played the tune, "The World Turned Upside Down." And I put guess a lot of us might remember the same way. Below these 200 and odd years past the time of all of that, the world seems mighty strange. But I thought, what would I think be positive and would be more hopefully entertaining and stimulate more discussion is not so much the partisan side of this one way or another. Because after all, we're clearly a divided country. And rather than try to challenge you to accept my opinion or you accept mine or I accept yours, let's talk about a little something more closer to home. Let's talk about our community and where we think we're going in the face of incredible economic growth, now incredible political turmoil, and some barriers that I think we've got to talk about that are going to constrain a lot of what we're able to do going forward. So what are those? Well, give me, humor me for about 5 minutes or maybe even less in setting the stage for you, giving you some statistics about where we live and what goes on where we live. And then you say, well, you know, we're kind of in a fact-light period in our lives right now. But I think the facts are unassailable, and I think they would help frame some of the discussion over the next 45 minutes to an hour. I've had the good fortune to be on the board of Headwaters Economics, and it's a nonpartisan economic research organization that does a tremendous amount of work, mostly for government agencies, for the Forest Service, for the Bureau of Land Management, for county and state governments all over the Rocky Mountain West. Frequently they are called to testify in Congress because they're sort of seen as an honest broker in the middle. So here are the numbers, here are the facts. So what I did was, and I encourage you to do this if you want to do it. It's all free, by the way. If you want to look in your web browser and do Headwaters Economics and pull up the website, there's something called an Economic Profile System, EPS, for every single county in the United States. Every county is free. It's updated every day. It's based on all kinds of government statistics and data that are pulled together all in one place. And for those of you who are really going to get wonkish about this sort of thing, you can actually, if you click onto it, you can build your own profile. You can say, well, I'd like something over in this part, and then I'd like something over that part. And it'll produce a report the way you'd like to see it, if you want to see it at all. But it helps to take us past trade opinions about things. I teach occasionally negotiation and bargaining, and I always tell the students, if you really want to gain strength in a negotiation, you use something called normative leverage. Good God, what's normative leverage? Well, normative leverage would be, if I want to buy your automobile, and you're willing to sell it to me, and you tell me, well, I'll sell you McCarty, I'll sell you my vehicle for $15,000. I say, good Lord, that's way over the price. I've gone to the Blue Book, I've gone online, and that vehicle is $12,000. Who has the most leverage, would you suppose, in your conversation with them? And so I used to tell people, work with me, look, if we're trading opinions, guess what? My opinion is better than yours. I love my opinions. I'm crazy. No. Show me some facts. Show me some data. Show me some something that's normative, and I'll respectfully listen to him. I may even actually change my opinion because I could be wrong. But let me give you a couple of just numbers to set the stage before we get into economics and politics. This will appeal to you. This is all Gallup County. Okay. Percent of population over 65 years of age, 14%. A lot of folks. Percent of population Hispanic, 17%. How's that? Percent of population without a high school diploma, 14%. Percent of population in deep poverty, 7%. Percent of families below poverty line, 11.5%. Percent of families that are with a single mother and below poverty line, 5%. Percent of households receiving food stamps, called SNAP, 13%. Percent of rentals where the gross rent exceeds 30% of the household income, 48%. Percent of households with no car, 10%. Percent of population without health insurance, 14%. A couple more stats and then we'll get off of the numbers, but I think it helps set the stage for what we need to talk about.
Does that include the college kids?
No, it does not. Gallup County population, as of the last census, 97,000 people. The population percent change from 1970, this is quite a long time now, from 1970 to now, 197%. The employment change over those same years, 445%. Personal income percent change over those years, 530%. Per capita income in Gallup County is $42,000. The government percent of total employment is 13%. It's a large part of the population, working population. Agriculture represents 1.8%. Travel and tourism, this will lead us to a discussion here coming up in a little bit. Travel and tourism employment, 25%. Federal land in Gallup County is a percent of all the land. What do you guess?
48%.
So when you talk about 200 raised property taxes, we only have half the property to tax. Federal payments that come to the back to the county government in lieu of other taxes, 3% of the county budget. And last but not least, the residential land area has grown from, in the last 14 years, 52%. So those are the stats. Stats are stats. But I think it helps frame a discussion that there are some structural barriers and problems in Gallup County that aren't simply going to be fixed by changing political faces or changing a few other things. You know, somebody used to say, if this stuff was easy, it'd get fixed, but it's not easy. It's incredibly difficult and complex. So let's sort of break up our discussion into kind of three buckets, if you will. I always tell people I like the rule of threes because I can't remember much more than that. And if I really get snarky with groups, I'll sometimes say, well, here's the three things we're going to talk about. And then I'll say, so what are those three things? And I'm about 0 for 3 million. I mean, I've never yet found anybody that could recite back the three things. Partly because we've all got this chatter in our heads, don't we? I mean, somebody, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do about lunch, or whether you've got emails to respond to, or what your kids are up to, or who knows what goes on. It's creepy in a way, but anyway, all that's sort of going on. So while I'm standing up here blathering on, you're thinking about stuff. So three things, okay? Let's just stick to the three. And God willing, you'll be able to hang on to all three. Well, let's talk about our tax structure for a little bit. Because the tax structure, of course, is what's going to drive much of the political stuff that we'll talk to a little bit, and it certainly drives the economic stuff. This is one of those where everything is connected to everything. And so if you say, well, let's just sort of have a full discussion about taxes, you really can't do it without a full discussion about the economic picture, which leads you to a full discussion about the political picture. I mean, it's all connected, much as though we'd like to think it's not. If you look at the tax structure, and I'll speak broadly here about a tax structure that is not only Gallup County, but is more Montana-centered, okay? Because so much of the tax structure is really state-driven, more than it is local-driven. But if you look at the combined tax burden on every one of us in the room, it's about 8.7% of our income. So if you add state income tax, if you add your property tax, if you add gasoline tax, the other taxes that are floating around that we each pay, the average burden in Montana, the average person pays about 8.7% of his or her income. That is a good number. It's a terrific number. Unless you want to talk about needs. But in terms of Chamber of Commerce, tourism, come up to Montana because the tax burden is 8.7%, that's a pretty good story to tell to people, particularly people who come from high tax areas outside of, particularly Rocky Mountain West. We all know because we're paying personal income tax, I hope we all are. Although I'm not finding others who don't pay. The personal income tax rate in Montana is 6.9%, the top rate. The corporate tax rate is about 6.7%, which leaves corporate tax rates 24th highest in the United States, meaning that we're in about the middle point of all states in terms of corporate taxes. Meaning half the states, if you want to look at it in a more negative light, are paying, collect far more corporate taxes than Montana does. If you look at the average property tax payment in Montana, please don't shoot me when you hear the number, is $1,400. For those of you who go, oh, that can't be right, it is right. So, if you look at the Montana state budget, about half of the budget comes from individual and corporate taxes, okay? About 20% of the state budget comes from oil and gas, declining. And about 20% comes from a gasoline tax, tobacco tax, and some other smaller taxes that Montana tax, okay? So that sort of sets, I think, the framework that we have a, what would argue to be a low personal income tax, 6.9% top rate. Believe me, most folks don't pay the top rate. Okay. You've got property taxes, which are historically low because, of course, the state is agriculture-based, of course. And the value of the land in so much of the state is very, very low. So that, you know, then leaves you with an average property tax payment across the population of $1,400. So if you talk then about, okay, well, thanks for being wonkish about that. So what are the economic challenges? What's the second bucket that we have to face? The tax challenges are great. We'll come back to that, hopefully have a little bit of discussion. And I'll give this one little piece of advice. From 9 p.m. Tuesday night until 12:25 today. I have not read a newspaper. I have not read an op-ed piece. And other than some of my friends who have sent me some emails about various things, I haven't read anything. It's true. First time in my adult life I've gone those many days without reading newspapers. My wife saved me from myself as I was leaving the house, and she said, "Look at me. Quit being a jerk." She tells me frequently. "Go read the Chronicle editorial. Don't embarrass yourself." Because it's about sales tax. So I caved in, and so I read the Chronicle editorial so I wouldn't look totally clueless about what's going on. And if you want to add, I don't know, 10 years to your life, try my plan out for 5 years. See what happens. For those of you who check your blood pressure, you'd be astonished at what you can do. Well, let's talk about the economic challenges. And let's kind of break it up, I guess, into the logical bites that we would want to look at. For Bozeman's economic challenges, let's talk about the county's economic challenges. And I think you could extrapolate in some ways about the state, but let's sort of look at that. I'll bet each of you would have a list of Bozeman challenges if we had time to go through it. I've had the good fortune, I think the good fortune, since last June of working with the City Commission on the City Strategic Plan. You know, I've written some pieces in the Chronicle. I'm all about planning. I mean, I think it's the only way out of the box for a business, for personal living, for governments, for anything. I'm just a zealot about it. And the benefit to me from being able to participate in that was being able to listen to all the feedback that has come to the City Commission through all the listening events and through the meetings and through the website for the strategic plan. And the participation rate, I'm hoping a lot of you have already weighed in on this, has been far beyond anything that I thought it was going to be. I figured, you know, because of the way the state of Montana is set up, every municipality, every government has to have growth plans, which are pretty nice-looking three-ring binders that gather dust on shelves, basically. It's a check the box. Oh, we have to have a growth plan. We'll hire a couple of consultants and we'll get a growth plan put together. And then, good news is we don't need to come back to it for 10 years. And that tends to be the way, and certainly the smaller and rural governments see it as an incredible and enormous pain in the neck. Some of the more urban and more developed counties, like Yellowstone County with Billings and Gallatin County, at least do a little bit more in the planning side. But let's talk about Bozeman for a second. Is there any doubt that probably the single greatest challenge that Bozeman has is the infrastructure in this place? I mean, there's plenty of other challenges, but it would certainly seem, from everything that we know, that it comes up on the top of everybody's list. I mean, when you have growth rates, like the stats, the numbers that I read to you, there isn't a government on the planet that can keep up with it. I mean, it simply can't be done. I look back to my earliest days, 100 years ago when I was a kid working for FedEx. FedEx was growing at a double-digit compounded growth rate. God, it was unbelievable. But we used to tell people, "God, don't look behind the curtain."
Yeah.
And just don't look. God, don't look behind the curtain. And it was just ugly, you know. But to the world, it was, you know, this shiny, bright, new life. And so, what's pleasing to me about the Bozeman City Commission, and I'm not making an infomercial for those folks, because I've got plenty of ways I could kick them around if I chose to. But what is that they accept and they acknowledge that a strategic plan is key to our future, key to trying to manage this unbelievable growth. Because absent that, it's like the old line, if you remember, in Alice in Wonderland. I think I even wrote this in one of the columns. And Alice comes upon the Cheshire Cat, and she says, "Excuse me, which way should I go?" And the Cheshire Cat said, "Well, where are you headed?" And Alice says, "Well, I don't know." And the Cheshire Cat says, "Then any road will take you there." And so, what we're seeing here with the strategic plan answers the question for the community, where do you want to go? Not how are you going to get there? Where do you want to go as a community? It's sort of a stake in the ground. And it's never fixed for long. I mean, no strategic plan is fixed for any long period of time. But it's a way for people to line up and say, okay, if this is where we're going to go, I'll work on how we're going to do it. And so where you see it being most effective in city government, and in county government too, is all of the various department directors can then say, okay, from, let's say, planning or revenue finance or any other departments, if that is where we say we're going to go as a city, as a community, I can take that down to my work group. I can take that to my folks, and we can figure out how we're going to do that. And so I rail at organizations, and I regularly round on the county commission. I'm like picking on my golden retriever. Mac understands that I'm talking to him, but there's not a lot that's connected up with me. And so if you talk about Bozeman and if you talk about infrastructure, you've got to then go back and talk about the tax structure. But what else would you say was on that list? Wouldn't you now talk about the law and justice thing? Which is certainly a subset, I suppose, in some way of infrastructure, but it's not any more than this library building was. And one of the things that is always amazing, I've been here 12 years now. I was only in my teens when I got here. What's always amazed me, when we were out raising money for this thing, how many people would say, "What the hell's wrong with the library we got?"
Yeah.
And you say, "Well, it doesn't meet needs going forward, and it's not adequate for various things, and this, that, and the other." And so many people would say, "Well, it's good enough." And so we get to that frequently in a lot of the government discussions. And so when you go out to Manhattan and Three Forks and you say to folks, "We need a new law and justice," the answer is, "What the hell's wrong with what we've got?" The answer I've always given, luckily I don't practice law anymore. I was practicing, we had quill pens and candles. Is that I've said to people, "Well, clearly you haven't served on a jury anywhere in the last 10 years. Luckily for you, you haven't had any piece of litigation over the last 10 years and hadn't had to go to any of the courtrooms." Because it's plain as day that the facility is wickedly out of date. It never was particularly well designed since it was a high school in the first place. So there's the challenge. Infrastructure, law and justice, and I suppose schools get tossed in there, doesn't it? And I think the list could go on, but I thought, well, what aren't those certainly at the top, probably in most everybody's list? I think they are. There may be some other items, which is not to diminish the other needs that are out there. There's all kinds of social needs, was always amazed, again, on the strategic planning and feedback from the community, how many things that I just never thought about. Arts, architecture, and all kinds of stuff that people feel very strongly about, that are important to them, about the place and the space that, you know, they're living. Okay, so if those are the three biggest challenges, what's the county have? Please stop me if I go on more than a couple of days here. The first challenge for the county, in my book, and you may have your own, certainly infrastructure as well. But tied closely to the infrastructure challenge for the county is a lack of planning. And it's sad in some respects because there is a well-developed and sophisticated county planning department with people like Sean O'Callaghan and other people who are very skilled in governmental planning. But they have been told to go to their room to be quiet, not to rock the boat. And so when you try to talk about planning, it immediately becomes a very contentious discussion, which lines up basically kind of county-city. And you should know, I presume you do, that everywhere in the country there is a natural tension between county and city governments. This is nothing unique in any way to Gallup and Bozeman or Gallup County and Belgrade. I mean, there's just a tension that's built in. In some places, they have successfully merged city-county functions. Here, the only thing we've been able to merge, and it's been hugely successful, is the health department. The Gallup County, Bozeman City Health Department is one unified health department. So you would ask, and many other communities have too, why would you have two building departments? And of course, the answer here is because the county building department doesn't do anything. Yeah. There are no building inspectors. And there are no codes other than the state code for electrical stuff and things like that. And so you have a lack of infrastructure. The county has been able to, by their viewpoint, successfully shift the infrastructure burden to the state, wherever they've been able to. And so if you go to Valley Center Road and places like that, that's a state road. Or if you go to 19th, that's a state road. If you go to Huffine, that's a state road. And so what they've been able to successfully say for decades now is, we've held the line on your county taxes. Well, of course, they are telling you only part of what's true, which is they simply shifted the burden to the state. Please show your hands if you pay state taxes. So it's a bit disingenuous that you know, we've kept the lid on taxes when, in fact, we've simply shifted it. There's a refusal on the county's part to adopt any planning tools. They're getting ready to have a growth policy. They've hired a consultant from Helena. I'm sure they'll know all about Gallup County and the growth challenges. And they'll be able to check the box one more time about their growth policy. And it'll go on the shelf with the other growth. Because if you read the growth policies, they sound terrific. We need to get people out of their automobiles. We need to have pedestrian bike pathways. We need to have clustered development. Really? Because it sure doesn't look like any of that's been put into place. There's certainly no tools to accomplish it. The last piece that I would talk about for the county is water and wastewater. I've written a few columns about it. I wrote one years ago about water. I'll never, ever. This very elderly man from around the west part of the county calls me up, and he said, "Did you write that column about water?" "Yes, sir, I sure did." Proud of myself. He said, "Well, you don't know a goddamn thing about it." And I admitted that he was right. Why argue? There's a lot of work that's been done through several organizations to talk about community water systems. Mostly around the Four Corners area. There's already some private water systems that are in the county. But if you look at the growth of what we call the triangle, you know, from Bozeman, Four Corners, into Belgrade, it's projected that over the next 5 years, there'll be an additional 17,000 individual wells drilled. 17,000. And no move afoot to put in community water and wastewater systems. So it's also 17,000 septic systems, by the way. So if you want to talk about challenges and economic challenges, so we've got the Bozeman County, and that hesitate to do this, but let's talk about political challenges. Don't throw those, please. And I'll see if I can keep it. I'm going to try and keep it as nonpartisan as I can, because I think the political challenges are centered more on issues and problems than on individuals. I probably, like each one of you, I've got plenty of strong feelings about some of the individuals. And I'm cheerful that a few of the individuals aren't going to be back in the legislature. But the challenge is, if you think about it from a state point of view, let's look at that for just a second. It's almost assured we're going to have continued stalemate in the Montana legislature. Part of that is because the dominant party right now is itself fairly fractured. And so there's not a lot of unanimity among the Republican folks that are getting ready to vote down. And I think what we're going to find is a continued stalemate over infrastructure, as we did in the last session. Which, and I've written a couple of pieces about this, was pretty incomprehensible to me, because borrowing rates for Montana right now are lower than they've been in about 4 years. And we have one of the highest bond ratings in the country, so which means we pay a lower rate when we do borrow money with bonds. And so, you know, the pushback in the last legislature was, well, we don't want any bonded indebtedness in Montana, which is nonsense. So we need to pay as we go, which is also nonsense. Also, the infrastructure turns on jobs, because infrastructure brings jobs, brings high-paying jobs. And so the good news was that in the gubernatorial campaign, both the candidates spoke strongly in support of infrastructure and infrastructure development. So I hope I'm proven wrong here. And I would love that somebody send me an email and say, well, McCarty, you were totally wrong. And I hope that's true. There will continue to be underfunding for education. I think that's, you know, been a historical pattern. If you look at both in Montana, you can look at any other state, but Montana has followed a pattern of declining percentage of tax revenues for higher education. Particularly if you look at Montana State, if you look at the University of Montana, if you look at the university system, the percentage of contribution from the legislature for over 10 years, perhaps longer than that, has been a declining percentage. And so the joke was that it used to be they'd say, well, you know, Montana State University is supported by the state of Montana. And as years would go by, they would say, well, the Montana State University is strongly contributed from the state of Montana. And then as the years would go by, shorten this joke, it would be that Montana State University is located in Montana. So we're going to see a decline in tax revenues from oil and gas. We can thank our lucky stars we're not in Wyoming, which is absolutely on the ropes. Because and I used to live in Wyoming. Luckily, I escaped and deal with it. But they, as you well know, put all their eggs in one basket. 20% of Montana revenue, though, remember, from the stats that I talked about, is oil and gas. So it is a substantial sum in terms of state revenue.
Does that include coal as well?
Yes, it does include. It's all minerals, extractive minerals, and oil and gas. And last but not least, before we move on to county and local, whether you're a Tea Party person or not, the fact of the matter is the Tea Party still holds great sway in the Montana political scene. And so I think that's going to create, not only just on the infrastructure side, but the Tea Party really was the main group that was able to stop, start with Art Wittig, the great Art. But they're there, and it's a fact, and I think it's something to simply acknowledge whether you support those folks or don't support those folks. I think you've got to at least acknowledge they're going to be a force that's going to be with us serving this near term. What do we have in the county? Well, we've got the re-election of Commissioner Skinner, who has been a friend of certainly the conservation community. I served for a long time on the GBLT board. And Joe was a strong supporter of the open space bonds, both of them. Has a conservation easement on his own place. He gets it. And I think when you talk to him about open space and valuing, keeping Gallatin County, I think Joe is as strong a supporter of those kinds of ideas as anybody I know. But unfortunately, until very recently, he has been dead set against any idea of planning. Absolutely dead set against any idea of planning tools like zoning, the Z word. Did Joe say the Z word when he was in the library? But what we have, and I've talked to the commissioners back and forth, but we've tried to convince them. I don't think countywide zoning is appropriate. I don't know, frankly, I don't know anybody that thinks countywide zoning is appropriate. But you certainly get west of Four Corners, and I don't know what you gain by substantial zoning. But again, go back to the triangle. If you look at that part of our county, how can we not go forward without some tools, some management tools? And I don't see that coming. I think that's one of the great political challenges we're going to be looking at. The county has refused to increase the gasoline tax. It can increase it, if any county could, by up to 2 cents. Now, a lot of people say, well, look, gasoline taxes are regressive. You know, wealthy people don't care about 2 cents a gallon, but poor people do, and poor people are much more likely to be affected by it. And it is regressive. But the comment by one of the commissioners, which I won't name, but I'll share with you, is, well, if we enacted a gas tax, it would just benefit most people. So, we're back to this tension, long-standing historical tension between county and city. The discouraging part for me also about Joe Skinner, not Joe the person, but what Joe stands for is that he was strongly supported by the SWIMBA, the Building Industry Association of Realtors. Why? Because they love it the way it is. Anything goes. Whatever you want to build, and however you want to build it, and wherever you want to build it, knock yourself down. And so we've also got a challenge at the county in their refusal to pay for any infrastructure. Perhaps you saw the letter of the editor of the Chronicle a couple of weeks ago where
There's a little stub of a street over by the Gallup Regional Park, which has a kind of a checkered history because the YMCA was going to go there.
Yeah.
And the Y was still, they had finished that little stub of the street. So they said, hell with it, we'll go out here where we can do it in the room around the area, which is exactly what they did. So now, circle back around, people ask the county to please finish the little stub, which is on the county park. Mm-hmm. And the answer is no thanks. Mm-hmm. And so the standard answer generally is that we don't have money for that, which is true because they never appropriate money. Bozeman challenges to me are a little less, maybe because I'm closer to it, maybe because I spent probably more time with several of the commissioners than probably some of you do. But I would say, sadly, there's at least one commissioner that frankly isn't interested in planning. It just simply does not see that as part of the commissioner's responsibility, or at least not interested in it anyway. Doesn't participate in meetings on planning. Doesn't weigh in. And so it becomes a challenge. It becomes a real challenge for the rest of the commission, I think, to sort of have to maneuver around that kind of a position. All is not well between the city growth plan, which is being revised, at the same time the strategic plan is being done. And so a lot of work is going to have to be done to reconcile those two. Is that a god-awful terrible problem? No, it's a management problem. It's just something that simply needs to be managed in a better way. And it's confusing for a lot of people in Bozeman to say, well, wait a second, you know, we go to these meetings about the growth plan, right? What's the strategic plan? Help me out here. I just went to the growth plan meeting. And so it's confusing for a lot of folks. And the question is, how do you reconcile the two? And one way to think about it, I'll simply leave it at that, strategic plan is much longer range, forward looking, where do you want to get to? The community plans tend to be more centered on how do you want to do stuff. Density, affordability, those kinds of issues. But they need to be reconciled. I mean, you can't simply have one that's disconnected from the other. It just simply doesn't make any sense. So we've talked about the three buckets, sort of, kind of. We talked about the tax structure. We talked about the economic challenges. We talked about the political challenges. And I am perfectly happy to open the floor up to any questions that you have or any comments that you want to make. I don't have all the answers, clearly. And I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the room by a long shot.